Blog Talk Radio. California.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Drive Through HR. This is William Tincup. We are without our friend and cohort, Brian Wimpen. He is traveling today. But Nisha and I will hold down the fort. I'm back from Sherm, Atlanta, which, by the way, is a fantastic HR conference, just a wonderful group of recruiting and HR pros in Atlanta. It's just, even if they're not doing stuff at the conference, they all kind of show up and be really supportive of the group, kind of like Illinois Sherm, just supportive of the group. But today we have one of my absolute favorites in the space because he actually is really, really smart and has an opinion, has a take, as Jim Rome would say. So without any further ado, we'd like to get to Charlie Judy. Charlie, for those that don't know you or are unaware, the uneducated, if you will, do us a favor and introduce yourself.
Well, I would love to. And William, greetings to you. Nisha, greetings to you. And thanks so much for inviting me to be here. I don't think I've ever had Tupac introduce me before.
Right.
But it's nice. It feels good. I might have to carry that around with me a little bit. So it's been a long time since I've talked to you guys. I'm the chief HR officer for a professional services firm, top 20 in the country, called Baker Tilly. We have around 2,000 professionals across the U.S. I won't name all the offices, but you can hit the web and learn a little bit more about us. We do traditional audit, tax work, advisory work. So we've got CPAs, accountants, and consultants. All professional, highly educated, ambitious, certainly intellectually capable, and pretty astute consumers of the career experience that my team focuses on taking care of every day and hopefully providing them something that they can get elsewhere. So neat organization. I've been there for about a year and a half. I spent a good part of my career with a larger firm, Deloitte. Then I did a startup gig for a little bit. I did a public company for a little bit. I went back to a consulting firm for a little bit. And now I'm here and hopefully for a much longer time. I've also played around in the kind of the non-corporate space. I was blogging for a while, and I was hanging out with the likes of Tincup and others, and I don't know if that's been bad or good for my career, but maybe it's been indifferent. But no, it really has been great. It's been a great way for me to see how much of the rest of the world lives and to make sure that as we think about delivering in a corporate environment that we've got a good take on what's happening elsewhere and what other good people are doing. So thanks to you and your team for continuing to bring that to the airwaves every day. So that's kind of neat.
If I remember this correctly, this is your first CHRO position, correct?
It is. I mean, and officially, I was an SVP of HR at a smaller public company for about 3 years. But, yeah, this is the first time that I've carried that moniker, yeah.
Anything that we should know about the first CHRO position? Is there did the C part, or did your wife start treating you differently, or is there something? I know you have a CPA. I know you have a bunch of initials after your name, but did she have to address you any particular way differently?
No, that would never work for my wife. Nor do I think it's worked for others either. I mean, it's been a really interesting experience for me. It's been a fantastic one, and for the first time in a long time, I'm feeling really good about kind of where I am and what I'm doing and who I'm working with. Our organization doesn't get too caught up in hierarchy. Titles are interesting, but don't necessarily drive the discussion. One of the things that I think I've really learned in this last year is that kind of every experience you have along the way can influence and should influence your approach to your job at hand. And so, there's no one recipe to solving any number of solutions that we face on a daily basis. But to have kind of a wealth of experiences to draw from and to have a number of people that I can reach out to, I mean, I can tell you guys that there are rarely a day that goes by that I don't think about calling someone that's smarter than I am about a particular issue who, will have some perspective. And having that network of people to kind of reach out to has been invaluable to me. This is it's a dynamic role. It's a complex one. It changes on a daily basis. It's a little bit of leader. It's a little bit of manager. It's a little bit of project manager. It's a little bit of change agent. It's a little bit of visionary. It's a little bit of fire putter outer. It's a lot of things. And so going it alone you can't do it. And that's why I'm really thankful not only to have that network, but I've got a great team, kind of 4,500 as part of the overall HR organization who mostly gets the stuff done, which is good.
Well, let's get right to the question of the day, Charlie, the hard-hitting question of the day. What's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
I don't know if there's one thing. I do lose sleep. I will tell you that there are restless nights. And that can change. Our organization moves at a pretty quick pace. So there's kind of always something new that we're thinking about. I have been reflecting recently on this notion of authenticity in the workplace. And I'm sorry that I don't get to attend your radio show as often as I'd like. I don't know that topic comes up very often. And if it has, if it's come up recently, but I remember Joe Gerstand, who, for those of you who don't know, is also just an amazing guy in this space. Really has some leading edge thinking around diversity and inclusion, and really just kind of the world of people in general. But he said once in a room, I can't remember which room it was, but he said, "How much of your true self shows up to work every day? How much do your employees feel like their true self gets to show up to work every day?" And that's a really interesting question. And I don't know how you even go about answering it. But I think if you were able to say, if an organization were able to say, we're pretty comfortable that most of the true self is there, that our people have the freedom, the permission, are given the flexibility to be who they are, that's a pretty powerful thing. And are we different? Are we a different person when we're at work than we are at home, than we are with our friends or our family or whatever? So I think about that in the context of the process that we design, the programs we design, the policies that we create. And as much as we as HR professionals would prefer not to have to do that, the fact of the matter is that you do. You have to have those programs. You have to have those processes. But how do you design them in a way that they either facilitate or, encourage people to be themselves? So that's something I've kind of been noodling on. Particularly as we in our organization start to think about kind of the next level of HR delivery and process and system and technology, et cetera, et cetera. What are your reactions to that, Timmy? I'm sorry, Billy.
Well, I think it's the Nisha. Let me just react to it. I think the I think the easy stuff is anything that's light, or where there's no conflict. It's the darkness, and like when you have depression. So take something like depression. Everyone's depressed. Everyone has bouts. You know, some serious, some not so serious, etc. But everyone deals with this, some depression. So how do you deal with depression at work? So, like, that's actually challenging. You know, guys that, like, your consultants that are on the road, you know, 4 days out of the week, et cetera, they're away from their families. They're missing a lot of those events. That's what they signed up for, and everyone mm-hmm. knows that. But yet, there's you can't help but feel like there's moments where they're going to feel a little dark. How do you embrace that? That's challenging. I don't care who mm-hmm. you are. That stuff's challenging. The easy stuff, like, hey, we have fun at work, and you know, that stuff, I think if it's the easy stuff, it's easy to all be authentic about. It's the harder, the darker, the edges where it gets a little bit more blurry for me. And then, Nisha, I know you had a follow-on as well.
Yeah, I really like this conversation as William. We talked about the depression factor as well. Well, when we talk about, you know, the work culture, as you said, that fun factor would always be there. That's a general concept. But when it comes to the cultural factor, which is really deep depth factor in any human being if you take. So when we say our work culture is really fun and open and everything collaborative, it's so great. But it comes to, you know, when a person really coming from a background where his family is not that open, even within his family he wasn't even open to, you know, talk with each other, how would that person be a family member in an organization where the entire culture is entirely opposite to it? So to the point of Charlie, the authenticity in the workplace, I really wanted to have that notion to be covered, like how do we foster an environment with, you know, with respect and being able to come to a workplace where you should not be hiding who you are as a person. How do we kind of foster that kind of an environment in an organization?
Yeah, and you both make good points. You know, William, I think there is easy stuff, and I think for every organization, the easy stuff is maybe even a little different. So I had an interesting conversation. I mean, this is basic, but it actually kind of points to it. Several of my peers and other firms were circulating some kind of knowledge sharing around, hey, what's your policy on tattoos? And, you know, my response or our response, thankfully, was, you know what, we're kind of silent on it. We basically start with, you know, use your head. I mean, every situation is a little bit different. You've got to consider who's sitting across the table from you, the clients that you're serving, the projects that you're on, the meetings that you have. But we're not going to tell you, you know, whether you can or you can't. You've got to use that judgment. There were firms that were really struggling with, you know, man, do we need to have something that says no, nothing can be visible or you can't have them at all? That really gets to the heart for some of authenticity, and is it okay for a firm to delve into those kind of personal things? I don't know that I have a clear answer on that.
No, I don't either. I think it's one of those things. It's almost you want to like trust that people have common sense. But that's what people search for. That's what they seek us out for, is some level of clarity. Like, it's not just – common sense isn't common anymore. So, you know, at the end of the day, create some level of clarity and at least help me, kind of guide me through some of these things. But authenticity, you know, if you can be yourself, you're probably going to unlock some hidden potential that wasn't necessarily there. But it's got to be – they have to drive that. Like, I think we would fail if we forced them to be authentic. You know what I mean? Like, we would fail.
Yeah,
if,
yeah.
But if they wanted to be authentic, we should embrace that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
There's something about being given the permission, and I don't even know if that's the right word. I mean, it's the environment. It's the you build a culture from the ground up, not from the top down. We've been wrestling with some transformation in our performance management process, and a lot of discussion around upward feedback. You know, how do we use that? Do we use it? Should we use it? You know, do we use a survey? Again, authenticity is not necessarily just about being yourself, but it's also about, creating some meaning. So let's take feedback, some real kind of firsthand meaning, context, maybe even intimacy a little bit with feedback that you're providing. So one of our business units said, you know what, we're not going to do the survey thing anymore. It doesn't give us any information. It gives us information, but none of it is really meaningful. There's nothing intimate about it. There's nothing authentic about it. It's some check boxes and a little bit of context. So what they decided to do is they decided to have live conversations, no forms, not really even any kind of parameters or guidelines, and said we're going to give every employee the opportunity to come into this room, and we're going to talk about their managers and their managers' managers and their managers' managers' managers, and we're going to ask some pointed questions. We're going to allow them to speak their minds, and then we're going to probe and we're going to get more context. But it's going to be an open dialogue. Now, the naysayers would say you're asking for trouble there, because it's going to become a bitch session. Only those people that are vocal are going to show up. And in fact, it was the absolute contrary. We had close to 100% attendance. There were very few people who had nothing to say. It was provided in a constructive way. You know, they filtered out the need to make a point or bust. And that's because they were allowed to be authentic. They were given the permission, I think, to say what they needed to say. It's been a very, very useful exercise for us.
Well, this comment will drive you crazy, but I think it's actually somewhat of our future. Is I think the game is highly personalized. Like, I think one of our failures has been that we treat people like Twinkies and we want to standardize everything. And it's been one of our failures and will be continue to be one of our failures. You have to treat people when you have to meet them where they are. So in the case of feedback, you and I need feedback differently. I mean, we're similar in a lot of ways, but we're also different in a lot of ways. So the way that I want feedback and the way that you want feedback is going to be different. And we as an organization should allow for that flexibility of saying, how do you need this? How do you need it to be served up? You want daily feedback? Not a problem. You'd like only you just want constructive criticism. You don't need the positive reinforcement. And you only want that monthly? Fantastic. Like, we should have the flexibility in us to meet them where they are. Yeah. And it throws out all the systems from a standardization perspective. Like, throw all that shit out, because it's useless anyhow. And most of it's just, it's teaching, it's the lowest common denominator. It's teaching to the test. And some people need that, but most often, especially high performers, secret, don't tell anybody, high performers need different things from you, right? Mm-hmm. Well, we've known that for a long time, but why don't we treat everybody else like high performers?
Mm-hmm. I think that point is at the root of a lot of this. I mean, so you can call it authenticity, you can call it customization, you can call it, individualization. It slices both ways. I think we in the realm of HR should constantly be walking that fine line between, what's the right level of standardization, centralization, so that we're not being dumb about how we allocate resources and spend our time and so on and so forth. But balance that with the need to take that and customize it or tailor it to whatever segment of the workforce, you decide to address, whether it's at a team level, at a demographic level, at an individual level. I mean, I think in a perfect world, as you described, we really would be delivering HR programs, policies, systems, procedures, et cetera, at the individual level. Much easier to talk about than done. But if we can continue to aspire to that, that's a pretty powerful thing. And that's why when I hear, you know, there was, I won't be able to do it justice. You guys probably can quote it off the top of your head. There was an article the other day about, you know, companies are getting rid of HR departments. you know, I know of organizations that are taking the complete opposite approach to lining their HR people up with their employees, in that they're now so specialized that they're focused on a very unique part of the employment life cycle and only a very unique part of that employment life cycle, so they don't get the whole context. And they're not interacting with the individual so much. They're much more programmatic based. I mean, I just don't understand how that resonates with – I can understand how it may resonate with an organization. I don't understand how that resonates with an individual or an employee. And if we're not starting there, I think we got it backwards.
Yeah, I think it's Charlie, a lot of that stuff for me, it's like when you read the Communist Manifesto, it reads well. And when you read it, it's absolutely magnificent. You read it and you're like, oh, my God, this is it. Thank God someone has actually delivered. The problem is when you bring humans into that model, it breaks – communism breaks apart. So when you think the thought, somebody's at a pub having a couple of pints, and they say, well, we just don't need an HR department. We'll get rid of all that inefficiency by not having the HR department. Again, in theory, that sounds great over a couple of Sam Adams. Problem is,
yeah,
it'll never work in the real world. Eventually, that'll be rooted out as a complete failure, like communism. It'll be rooted out as a failure, and they'll have an HR department. They'll call it something different because they'll never want to admit failure. So it'll be the people operations, the human people talent, something else initiative, or something whatever. But they'll of course have HR.
I don't know why we keep tinkering with it. I mean, either do something drastically different or, you know, do what we're doing just better. I mean, it feels like we're always looking for this holy grail on what the right HR organization is and what the right alignment is. But it doesn't exist, man. I mean, it depends on the business. It depends on where that business is in its life cycle and evolution. Mm-hmm. It depends on the kinds of people that you're trying to create an experience for. I mean, it depends on everything. And so to even suggest that there's a model that's going to work better for all organizations is just asinine. It doesn't make sense. We don't do it. Do we do it with IT? I don't know of many iterations of the IT function out there. I don't know that many iterations of the marketing function out there. But the HR function, there's like 100 iterations of it.
Well, Charlie, I remember that post that you said from Wall Street Journal, as you said, companies are ditching HR. Well, after you guys have talked, what I've wanted to ask you both at this point is, like, you know, we are social HR professionals, and we are always talking about how HR can add value to the organization, and we project all the great and not that great part of our HR function and as an organization as well. And there are some traditional HR professionals that I can, talk with, and they always raise their hands wanting to get noticed by their business function, wanting to get recognized by their business function. So that is there. So what do you think is the key for HR's acceptance, if I can ask you both?
Acceptance by the business, you mean, or by the business, yeah.
And by the people as well, by the people in that organization as well.
I mean, I think in a word, it's relevance. If you're not, and again, this doesn't just apply to HR. I mean, I think this applies certainly to any part of an organization's infrastructure. If you're not providing something to the end user that's relevant mm-hmm. to their own experience, then you're just not going to be viewed as, certainly not going to be viewed as valuable, and you're not going to, you're just not even going to warrant the attention. And I think that goes back to, you know, this conversation around customization. The problem is that we, organizations believe that there's only one way to define, again, broad generalization on my part, but many organizations believe that there's only one way to define relevance, that HR can prove its relevance through really only one or two or three. This is the list of things HR should be doing to be relevant. Well, that may be true for person X over there, but not for person Y over there. What's relevant to that person? I think finding out what relevance means in your organization and for your employees is where you got to start.
I think I'm right there with Charlie. I think it's the adding value part of it. But I also think that tangentially, that just stop seeking acceptance. Mm. You know, just at its core, when you're trying to seek acceptance, there's something broken in you. Just go and add value. You know, the CMO isn't seeking acceptance. The pick any of the other officers. The CFO, and that's a great one, especially top of mind theme for me today. But the CFO is not seeking acceptance, nor should the CHRO. Just add value. The sports metaphor is just win. If you win, it solves everything else. It's when you're not winning that everything gets called into question, unless you're a racist, and then there's obviously different rules of pride. So, Charlie, I got to ask you about your fishbowl logic. If you were drafting fishbowl logic today, how different or how similar would it be?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know that it would change a whole lot, and you know, for those of you that have no idea what Tim Cup's talking about, there, you know, I tried to encapsulate really probably 140 characters or less each time, you know, just kind of observations around the realm of people in HR and talent when I was blogging, and it became this list of maybe over 300 things or something. I do think a lot of those things have informed kind of certainly my approach, my philosophy, and maybe even my platform. And I, you know, this is not about me, but I do think that a lot of those things still make sense because they're fundamental. I think sometimes we lose track of the fundamentals. I love your comment around stop seeking acceptance. That is unique to we in HR. I know it's been talked about probably for hours and hours on the show alone. Is it an inferiority complex? Is it that the world has taught us that that's what we have to do? I think that we are accepted. I really do. I think that we're accepted as a function. I think we're accepted as an individual. I certainly feel that at Baker Tilly, and I'm sure that many of you as HR professionals feel it as well. So, kind of skirting your question, but I do think that it's the fundamentals haven't shifted.
Wonderful. Well, I totally agree with you both, and thank you so much for answering that particular question for me. So, Charlie, it's been great, and it's been a wonderful opportunity for us to have you on the show today with us. And so where can people come and find you, probably connect with you, and send you a note?
Yeah, well, I'm still somewhat active in the Twitter sphere. I not as much as I used to be, but that's at HR Fishbowl. And I am not blogging anymore, maybe one day again, but right now I'm focused on kind of the day job and the task at hand. You're welcome to find me on LinkedIn. I'm an open networker and happy to connect with you guys and believe, as you heard me say at the beginning of all this, really very strongly in the power of networks. So, thanks to you guys for having me here today. I really enjoyed being back and hope to do it again soon.
Well, thanks, Charlie. Thanks, William. And to our audience, we'll talk to you all soon.